It is Saturday, May 16th, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news and your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have geeks. Ben Jaffe, he's a freelance media dude living in Berkeley and commuting down here just for us.
Good morning.
We also have Al Luckow. Al Luckow is a new media architect. He works for himself. He's available for... Well, you're probably totally booked because you're so good. Huh?
I'm available.
And we have Miles Elam, completely unavailable slacker and political junkie, student of American literature. Good morning, Miles.
Modern lit, but yes.
Oh, modern lit.
Yes.
Is that a modification? Or wait, why are you taking the Shakespeare class if you're doing modern lit? See, this is what's confusing me.
Because you need to be well-rounded, sir.
Thank you. Geeks, thanks for being here. Let's start off with the geek news. I think that I'm going to ask Ben, you frantically called me in the middle of the week and go, Lyle, you got to get online and see this thing. It's amazing. I was like, what is it? NASA TV, take a look. And it was the Hubble.
Indeed. The first time we've seen the Hubble for 7 years from space. And you logged on. And what was it you said earlier?
Well, what happened was that the window of time when I logged on, the half an hour where I kind of had it in one of my upper right-hand corners while I was working, nothing happened.
It was right after they docked.
Right. So and all so, it is like a picture of the Hubble being inside. Was it inside the shuttle at that point?
Did you see the big cross? Well, what had happened is they grappled it with the arm, and we were watching the arm camera, and they have the cross so you can align. And I called you probably 30 seconds before they docked. You logged on right after they docked, and you just saw that X because it had just docked and it wasn't moving.
Well, I saw the Hubble. I mean, the Hubble was in the image.
It
wasn't the X thing. No, I didn't see that. It was basically kind of an upper shot of the telescope. But I was wondering, they didn't pull that into the shuttle. That was just on an arm of the shuttle.
It's attached to the bay. In the shuttle.
So. But is it inside the bay? Does it get pulled
in? No, it's not too big. It's sticking up. It kind of forms like an upside down T.
Okay.
And then
did they take that over to the station or did they leave it there?
Sorry, just one thing. Yeah. An upside down. What is upside down when you're in space, when you're in orbit?
I would imagine toward Earth is
down. I think
down.
The cameras in the space shuttle
if Earth is in the shot, we have a down.
Yeah, but
what if you're underneath
a three-dimensional down, and we don't talk about text in three dimensions, so a T is a bad analogy.
Okay.
How about it looks like a shuttle?
Geek Speak's been canceled.
Audio semantics.
This is precisely the sort of pedantry up with which we will not put.
Okay.
What's the quote from?
Forming a right angle to the shuttle.
It's attributed to Churchill, but who knows?
Okay, thank you.
Forming a right angle to the shuttle. How's that?
All right. And they didn't move. They stayed there. They went into the orbit of that, and they kept staying there. They didn't, bring it over to the space station or anything like that, right?
No. The space station is in a completely different orbit.
Right.
But, as they were docking, I mean, just to put it in perspective, I mean, they relatively were moving at, 1 foot per second as they were approaching the shuttle. But... in the meantime, both the space shuttle and Hubble were both, hurtling through space at 17,000 miles per hour relative to the Earth, 300 miles above the Earth's surface. So it's kind of...
Can you do that in metric?
No, I can't.
But the time we're a spacefaring race, we need to be in the metric system.
So when we talk
about space stories, we've got to...
US.
No. I totally agree with you. It's the U.S., Myanmar, and Liberia. That's it. That's the only people who aren't using the metric system.
You know, I understand the idea that, I understand how far a mile is because I drive it. But when you talk about those kind of speeds, I can't comprehend what that really means. And so let's use the systems of science instead. And then maybe at some point we'll be able to translate into that.
Okay, let me translate. Really, really fast.
Thank you.
And
but
really
only,
far
but
above
only
the
really
Earth.
Fast comparative to Earth.
How many parsecs per second?
There you go. So that's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, when you have two things in space, it's really the relative velocity that matters. I mean, who cares how fast it's going? But it's still kind of an interesting thing to think about.
What are they doing with the Hubble Space?
What are they doing?
Telescope?
Okay, so this is an $887 million to repair and to upgrade the Hubble Space Telescope, because we haven't really been really in any kind of contact. We haven't even seen the darn thing for 7 years, really, from space up close or anything. And so it's just been kind of chugging along, doing its thing, you know, taking some images and slowly breaking piece by piece by piece. And so what we're doing now is we're fixing. We're repairing.
We don't need to get into the details of what we're repairing.
Yeah, two instruments, and then we're installing two new awesome instruments, batteries, gyroscopes, that kind of stuff.
It's funny because we didn't intend to do this. We weren't going to be servicing this thing, right? It was going to live its life and then be over. But we're still servicing it and improving it, which is cool. And actually, I think we're putting new sensors on it. They're going to do completely new things.
Yeah, Hubble's over, 10, 15 years past its lifespan?
It's pretty cool that it's still running. And I'm wondering, is that because... like, why are we holding on to it?
Well, it's kind of a cool thing. It's just a telescope in space, and we can use that infrastructure. If we can use that infrastructure, then we don't have to send something else up. Plus, also, the space shuttle is not going to be going up very much anymore.
And that had to go up in the space shuttle because it's so big.
Yeah, it has to be. Space shuttle missions have to be done by the end of 2010, I think.
Yeah. Okay, that's totally cool. So what... go ahead.
Sorry.
I just want to say that I've been getting really into what's happening in space. One of the geeks sent a link about the International Space Station and all the modules that it has, and seeing how big is. It's huge now.
That flash animation where they're showing all the things that they have been added.
It's on one of the older shows. All right. Well, thank you very much for the Hubble update. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. One other quick thing. Yeah. So that was Wednesday. Oh, but by the way, also, you can still log on to NASA TV, and they're doing spacewalks. They're still doing spacewalks.
They're losing wrenches left and right.
Oh God, she's never going to hear the end of that. Someone who's in a spacewalk 4 months ago lost a tool bag which had $100,000 worth of tools.
You know what a U.S. person is that is on a spacewalk? What they're called? An astronaut. So the astronaut dropped.
The spacewalking astronaut.
Yes.
Precisely the sort of pedantry up with which we will not put.
Okay,
but anyway, and the last thing I want to say is also the other thing that happened in space is Kepler, which is
the scientist from hundreds of years ago.
The spacecraft that's looking for planets by looking at the stars and their light output and trying to see patterns in the light decreasing and increasing
extrapolating orbiting body. Yeah,
exactly. That just went into operation.
Cool.
And up until now, it's just been gathering, background noise and everything like that. So
the finding. What are extrasolar planets called?
Exoplanets.
Finding exoplanets is going to be, pretty soon it will be look, I found more sand in my shoe. There are going to be so many planets that it's going to be boring at some point.
We'll all have one name.
Of course, any M-class planets, that's what we really want to know.
Yeah.
See the Star Trek movie if you can.
See, now you're recommending that, now that you've seen it. So.
Okay, and the Hubble is actually being grabbed by a big robotic arm, which is cool. But what are robots doing here on Earth, Al? Well,
you don't even want to know. I've been talking about robots for a few weeks now. A couple weeks ago, I mentioned one that was just, very innocent, very cute. Ran around in New York, and you picked it up, had a sign on it, said, please point me in the direction of this place.
And it was small. It was like a little dog type thing.
Cute little thing, rode around.
And basically, it had a sign said, point me in the direction of blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And that's where I'm going. And people would do that, and pretty much the robot got to its destination.
And it was cute. It had a little smiley face on it and everything, and it worked. And but, that was really just the robot's way in to infiltrating our society.
Our social systems.
They've actually got one now. And this is in the Technical University of Munich. They've got a robot very similar. But it instead doesn't rely on you picking it up. It actually drives around. Has lenses on it that can see you. It can notice that, oh, that's a human. And they have this on YouTube, and they show what the robot's seeing and as well as how the robot moves. And it's got a little red circle that says, oh, human face. And it goes over to this person.
It does facial detection.
Yeah, facial detection. And it goes over to it, and it says, can you point me in the direction of this place?
Doesn't it do it in a robotic-type voice?
You know what?
They didn't have...
You know what it is? It's a text on the screen.
All right.
And
thing drives around, finds a person, goes up to the person, and on the screen says, I need to go to Union Station.
Right.
And the person can then, help it by...
It says, please point in the direction of this. And then the person turns and points, and the robot picks up the person's movements in 3D and looks to where the arm is pointing. And it builds a map all around the person. And you know, they show what the robot's actually seeing. It looks very suspiciously
and this,
like
yeah.
that robot in RoboCop.
Yeah. Oh, the vision of it. Yeah, yeah. It's like kind of pseudo 3D imagery.
Yeah. Like the point of view shots of the robot.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned that earlier. And the thing that's interesting, of course, is the robot's not looking at the 3D image that we see, right? It just is looking at the data.
Right.
And to visualize what the data looks like, it's being visualized for us. But the robot, of course, it doesn't have any concept of sight.
But
it's very interesting.
How do you know that that's not what we're doing unconsciously?
Absolutely. We are gathering data, and
we have a perception in the large of the aggregate.
We just have a very good matching system that pretty much what we see and then turn into, we can touch, except for when people see ghosts. And then actually we're being faking ourselves out.
Well, I don't know if this thing can see ghosts, but as it moves around, it actually maps the entire area. So it maps all the, builds a 3D map of everywhere it is and all the people. In this one, it took, it was a mile or 1.5 kilometers away, and it took 30 hours to get there.
Good job on the metric.
It's definitely not cute. I don't know that if I saw this thing come up to me that I would be willing to talk to it.
Right. It looks like it looks kind of like a small stove.
It looks like kind of like a mini
dishwasher.
Zamboni.
Yeah, and then it looks it's very boxy. None of the most.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was bipedal, it would be kind of scary.
Yeah.
Or, of course, if it had guns, you know, that would be really horribly frightening.
I mean, it would be.
But, okay, one more robot story.
Okay, so
then, a little more cute.
There's another one. You think when you see one of these things, you can just run away. Well, now there's a there's a robot
just
called...
concept of that.
It's called Rise V2. And it's a quadrupedal configuration, and it's by Boston Dynamics, and they built this robot that can climb telephone poles. It's about the size of a cat, and they have...
So if you're being chased by this robot,
so you think, I'll just run away, I'll climb up this tree, and
wait.
Now they have a robot that you just basically, they have a video of it, and you just clip it on the thing, and it's... just.
Wait, can it chase you on ground, or can it only climb poles?
It depends if there's a pole laying down.
Yeah, that one only does the pole, but it's just a question of time.
So it run along the Amtrak rails, and you know...
So I would assume this is probably being used to fix... systems on telephone.
Obviously it's all prototype type things, but they've got them working. But it's just a question of time before they add the pole climbing ability and the pointing 3D ability. You know,
and
all that together.
A 3D pointing thing that can say, look at the pole.
We go.
How much does it talk about? How much weight it can carry going up that pole?
Didn't say.
Okay.
Yeah, could it carry a person kicking and screaming up the pole?
Kind of
or you
small.
Just have it strapped to your chest and you just grab on.
It looks like it
can come get you, but it can't.
So imagine we get a space elevator, then we could just strap this thing onto our chest, and wherever we want to go into space, we just walk up to this rope and.
They start out as our servants.
Moving on. Mr. Elam. Hi.
Speaking of robots.
Wow.
This is a robot on Mars. You all heard about the Spirit of the Spirit and Opportunity rovers.
Duo. Uh-huh.
And the fact that they have lasted a lot longer than their original plan. They're now going on, 7 years?
Something
now,
ridiculous.
Something
like that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they were originally planned for 90 days. Three months.
No, really?
Months.
Wow.
That was their original.
And they've gone through winters and the whole deal.
Yeah,
so,
I guess it isn't 7 years. I guess it's less than that.
So what about
Miles Computers?
Wait, which one is this? Do you know where on Mars this one is? Because I know that the one up at the
down
Mars
by the
pole,
7-Eleven. What are you talking about?
There's no.
This isn't a robot they found
not,
on Mars.
It's
you
not
know,
the
7-Eleven on Mars.
It's not the one at the pole. That one did freeze over.
That one
come back on. Like
no
Mars
way.
And Opportunity. I mean, Spirit and Opportunity or not. But so
Opportunity is. Oh wait,
this is Spirit or Opportunity? Who is this?
This is Spirit.
Okay, then there's a third one that froze on the North Pole, I think. But
and it's
not coming back probably. Okay,
right.
So go on.
Spirit is stuck in some soft sand. Now, normally you don't want to. This doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
Are there any
news,
telephone poles around?
Oh, man.
You wouldn't want to think of it as that big of a deal. Oh, look, a little robot got its wheel stuck. But
why doesn't
these
it
things,
just ask someone
like,
to take it
they're
out?
Like the little engine that could. You
yeah,
know, they,
yeah.
they just keep going. They're the Energizer Bunny of NASA.
You know, I can see some geek in NASA somewhere that goes, well, yeah, what do you expect? They were going to stop working. Like, the entire time, they've been kind of pessimistic and waiting for it to happen. So when it happens, like, yeah, of course.
But they haven't, though. What they're doing is, one, the rover is getting a whole bunch of solar
power.
The solar power is coming on strong.
Mm-hmm.
Much more so than they were. They've gotten lucky with storms blowing the dust off of the panels, and it's still, having life in them. And so what they're doing is they're stopping it for the next week or so and checking to see, well, okay, if we do this, what will happen? If we do this, what will happen? And using the instruments on the rover itself to test the composition of the soil to know what they're dealing with.
Cool.
So it's still, they're still doing the science, even in trying to extract it from a problem.
That's a good value for our tax dollar. Something
indeed
that lasts much longer than it, you know. It's kind of like vitamins. You buy vitamins and they say they're expired. And it's still vitamin C, you know. What's the difference? It's a year old.
Right.
Well, you probably just don't want to be taking, you know, expired vitamins, whereas in this case it's, you know, moving. Well, anyway.
Miles,
oh, just as a final plug, though, with regard to NASA, people saying, oh, NASA uses so much money. First off, their budget really isn't that big compared to the national budget. But also, when the space shuttle gets retired, what was it, next year? Something like that? 2010?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, 11. Or before 11.
We will have no manned vehicle to go up. So there's no way to get a person.
Well, the U.S., yeah.
The U.S., right? We'd be dependent.
Time since we started the
space program, yeah. That we'll be completely dependent upon other countries to get stuff up. The things that the space shuttle did, but, we won't have a replacement vehicle for years.
I gotta say, that's okay. I want space travel to be an international thing. I don't want our idea of nations to leave the planet.
Well, there are commercial people. There's commercial companies that actually launch. A friend of mine works Sea Launch. They actually countries will contract with them and they launch the.
Yeah. And I have no problem with collaboration. The International Space Station is all about collaboration. It's that issue of, for example, many of the rockets that were used in the 60s and 70s, we can't make them anymore. The knowledge is gone. We didn't have people continuing the tradition long enough, and there was a lull, so we have to start over again.
Nobody wrote it down?
I thought you wrote it down.
Let's move it on. I'm going to... Al, you were talking about a new game on the iPhone that seemed interesting.
Yeah.
I quote, new game.
It's not really a new game, but for those of us out there who were around at the beginning of this whole fantasy kind of game kind of thing, you'll remember Myst.
Myst, like the first CD game.
The CD was new, and there was this hypercard-based game, and you kind of moved around in this environment, and you didn't really... It wasn't like you were shooting and killing people. You were just trying to find things out.
And kind of doing puzzles.
And you waited 10 or 15 seconds for the new screen to come up.
But the cool thing was, it was this beautiful imagery, and you could move around in a little bit and see it.
Yeah, it was like an adventure and a mystery, and it was beautiful, and everybody got it, and like there's at least 1% of the people actually figured it out.
But if you played Myst, you know, go up on our site right now. You can go to GeekSpeak and join the Geek chat log and talk about Myst a bit.
I mean,
a cool thing. I know a lot of people that don't, to this day, I don't know if they play video games, played Myst.
I think it still has the same, I went back and looked at it, and it still has the same excitement to me. I mean, the book, the very beginning, the book falling, and the guy narrating it, and it was just
whole... So is the game on the iPhone exactly the same
They now
thing?
Have an iPhone game that is Myst. It's the Myst game ported to the iPhone.
Is it the same art and everything?
Yes, I actually have it on my iPhone.
Oh, that's great. You gotta, pull it out.
They said, though, that... you know, this is what I read. It didn't seem like that big a deal to me when I put it on here, but they said that the file is 700 megabytes.
That's kind of big. I mean, that's...
Which is big. For an iPhone.
Your iPhone's what, 2 gig or 4 gig?
I have the...
4 gig, probably.
8 gig.
8 gig, okay.
But still, I mean, you know... I mean,
it looks like Myst. That's
around,
so cool.
It's, you know, you touch it. It has the sound effects. It's got that rich sound. You're wearing earbuds, you know.
It doesn't do the fade between when you look back and forth.
You can change. There's a preference for the transition effects. But, you know, I mean, this is
it's
really
so cool to see the Myst world again.
It's like a classic. I mean, if you've ever played Myst, you know, it's worth checking out
just to
try it, because it just brings back all those memories of like being. I think there was even a video game that came out called Pyst. PYST.
Yeah, that was like that.
It was like it.
Like a violent one?
Well, no, the people that just got frustrated with trying to get through Myst.
Right.
And
right.
It had all these like garbage and stuff.
It
and
was
all
hard to get through it. It was, it took time.
I remember friends at other universities having these games like, I could solve this and, you know, we got a group of people together and we got to Myst and we solved it in 11 hours, you know.
And it really took that long. I mean, it wasn't easy.
Great. So thank you, Al, for the iPhone Myst game. Miles, what's going on in textbooks in California?
To solve some of the budget crisis, education in California, as a backdrop, accounts for about 40% of our annual budget.
Mm-hmm.
A huge chunk of the monies that we put out is for education.
School. Yeah.
So any way that we can cut that as a cut that down as a line item is going to be a major win for the state.
Couldn't we take a few years and just not teach kids? You know, so I'm running around the park.
Yes, we could. I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so
the school of life.
Let's just let the comments speak.
So one of the ways, to reduce those costs has been to look at open source digital textbooks. The idea of you have collaborative works for, you know, algebra textbooks, calculus textbooks, sciences like biology, physics, chemistry, and having them take the place of traditional textbook manufacturers or the standard line. Unfortunately, it does come across a bunch of problems. One of the reasons why the textbooks are so expensive is because they have to go through a tremendous number of bureaucratic hoops to get through to a student's desk. And so this is one of the issues that's coming to the fore, and it's a fairly fascinating story. I highly recommend people read more about it.
We have a link from geekspeak.org.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that, one, you can find out what the issues are with education and what goes into making a textbook, but also what people are doing to try to solve it, like, for example, a collaborative work, where people can get a lot of diverse groups of people can put in their two cents, as it were, to try to get a better textbook.
Yeah.
On the open source model that we've become more familiar with regard to Linux or BSD Firefox.
It wouldn't save money in the printing aspect because the kids still need to have a printed textbook, right? We're not digital enough to stay off that world.
Right.
But it would save money in the copyright and ownership.
Although we are getting closer to that point where it might be cheaper just to get a flat panel that has a bunch of – it has all your textbooks
or,
on
you know,
it.
Or how many kids are using their parents' home computer?
Right.
You know? I mean, it's possible that you could set up a situation where the kids can access the textbook from their home computer as well, of course. And, of course, that becomes a digital
thing. Or printing out the
as
chapters
well.
On an as-needed basis, because a lot of times you don't even
you
use
don't
the whole book.
Them. That's true. It's true. Especially like someone like me. I didn't use my textbooks much at all.
Well, I think of a calculus textbook, that is multiple classes.
And teaching math using computers, so much easier. Because you can visualize stuff, you can graph things, you can actually understand the math concepts behind it. Okay, but that's a bit of a sideline. Well, we got calls piling up right away. Let's go ahead and do one more news story. Let's talk a little bit about jetpacks.
Oh, I'll take that one.
Yeah. Or emotion, go for it.
I'll take that one. You know, I talked about jetpacks before, and you know, I talked about, but it really was a hovercraft that was a, sort of a turbine based thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran across one recently that runs on hydrogen peroxide, and has like the residual exhaust is just water. And this thing goes 70 miles an hour, and they have it on YouTube, and you can see the examples of it and everything. We have it on our website. Fast. I mean, the guy gets on it and phew, he's gone. You know, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Okay.
How fast is fast?
70 miles an hour. It's world record.
Wow.
Okay. There's
a whole new generation of Darwin Awards ready to be given out.
Oh, my
that
gosh.
Too. There's a bit of a downside.
How long does it last? Is that the downside?
30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Yeah, 30 seconds.
It can get you up, but you have to get yourself back down.
0 to 70 in back without dying.
Yeah, do what you have
seconds.
To do within that 30 second
I think
time period.
It's actually 33 seconds, so there's that extra 30, 3 seconds yeah. to go. I'm going to die.
And I don't think it goes 34 seconds. So you got to have a pretty accurate watch. Which maybe it comes
so
with.
You see this person like levitate up or, you know, get off the ground and then shoot off at almost
7 miles an hour. They actually sell these things. And there's two companies. There's one in Mexico and there's one in the U.S. Jetpack International in the U.S. And in the Mexican company is called Tecnologica Aeroespacia Mexicana. And they both build the basic same kind of thing. And they sell it and it comes with lessons. And you can like buy one, you know, for that 30-second period.
Oh,
You can. It's the last thing you'll buy. It's great.
Yeah, it's you want to have that feeling. You can get it, and it's available now.
That's ridiculous. Because
you can actually go quite a ways
in 30 seconds.
Trick,
there's a lot to do.
But the real trick would be, like, first off, we're going to find the peroxide, right? So you're going to
they give you that. They have whole thing on.
So you don't get to carry it. So you're going to go, you know, 15 miles and then land, and
you'll want to have peroxide.
15 miles.
Land.
Well, you go half a mile.
Is that how far?
70 miles an hour, 30 seconds.
But you
assuming
go,
that you use those extra 3 seconds to accelerate and decelerate, then and you're perfect at landing. And
you do not want to switch in the second half. You do not want to switch from 0 to 70 miles an hour.
They also
that
don't
would hurt your body.
They also don't mention
in
anything
half a
about
second.
Parachutes. Yes.
Well, I mean, you think
parachutes?
About
you don't get
they
a parachute?
Don't mention anything
oh
about
my
parachutes.
Because that'd be the thing to do. You just shoot straight up.
Right.
Right. That would be the way
and
to do it.
And these things are, they go parachute. High. I mean, these.
And you could glide. Yeah.
And then
you'd
be able to go farther, probably.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool and it's just, it doesn't really harm the environment.
So can we all chip in and get one?
We
need an evaluation. We need an evaluation copy, actually.
We just use one.
We're
going
to do a radio review. Can you send us a free
one? We'll do a radio review of this jetpack.
They also make one that looks like a personal helicopter. But,
I love the review. So the jetpack works. Where'd he go?
He was here just a second ago.
It can jet into the air, right?
Man.
Or any other jetpacks?
There's one that's built that looks like a helicopter that uses the spinning rotors, but it doesn't. The spinning rotors that close to my head isn't really.
They're above your head.
They're
so
right above
so
your
if
head.
You wave to your friend,
yeah, it's
oh, I
waving
lost your
is
arm.
Discouraged. On that model.
Does not sound good,
but that one.
That's horrible.
All right,
I just love how excited you get about jetpacks. I just have to say, you know, like
well, you know,
time.
When we actually have jetpacks as our main form of communication, it will be the future.
That you communicate cars. Through yeah. jetpacks. It's like a carrier pigeon. Yeah. Like a carrier pigeon. You strap a carrier pigeon to a jetpack.
And you gotta attack me.
Yeah.
That's the way he is. You know?
Man, a pigeon on a jetpack. No, that's what I want.
I mean, I don't
that's
think
almost as good as lasers.
We can transfer things almost at the speed of light if we use lasers. I don't think you could be more efficient with jetpacks.
You know, you should check out geekspeak.org and look at these videos of these jetpacks.
They're amazing.
And
they?
Tell me you're not excited about these things.
Oh yeah.
You know, 30 seconds, yeah, but...
All right. You know. From Carmel Valley, Lewis, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, I have a Apple PowerBook G4, and it was having trouble starting up. So the guys at the Genius Bar at the store said, it needs a new hard drive. Why don't you take it back home and do a backup before you bring it back in, and we'll swap it out.
Good idea.
I brought it home and can't boot it one more time to do that final backup.
Have you tried booting in Target Disk Mode?
Yeah, I did, but... And when I... And it will launch to the target disk mode, but then when I plug it into another computer to bring that hard drive over, or it just won't. The other computer doesn't recognize.
It should be plugged in already.
Are you plugging it into a Mac or a PC?
As the another Mac.
Another Mac. Yeah. Have you tried checking disk utility instead of just waiting for the disk to pop up? It's possible that the disk is there, but it's just not mounting properly.
Let me do
like
some
that.
Translation here. You get your second Macintosh, and you get it connected to this Macintosh, the FireWire. You turn on the machine. You hold down the T key for target disk mode. Your broken computer becomes an external hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
On the machine that's actually working, you start up disk utilities. And disk utilities will show you the drive kind of trying to mount before the finder actually sees it. And you can do a repair. You can do other things like that. I'm fearful of this whole process. It sounds to me like you're in a place of hard drive failure that the more you do it, the more chances you will lose your data.
Yeah.
So what I would do right now is actually, I don't know how much more you could. One trick would be to get it cooled. That's assuming it's an electronics issue.
Yeah.
You can put it in a Ziploc bags and throw it in a freezer for a while, and it will cool down, and then plug it in, possibly get it off. That's an old trick. But you have to get it outside of the computer. If the data is really important to you and you don't have recent backups, I might take it to a data recovery person at this point.
And you also might want to clarify how what the Genius Bar people said. Do they say you need a new computer because your hard drive is failing? Or, a new hard drive because your hard drive is failing? Or was it something else? Because if your hard drive is failing, then you want to think about a data recovery. But if they were saying there was some other hardware issue... It doesn't make much sense to me that they would say, "Oh, you need to back up your hard drive because we need to replace your hard drive." If they knew your hard drive was failing, then
right. they're saying the hard drive's failing. We want to give you a new hard drive, pull it out, and charge you a lot of money because it's a G4 and it's an older machine.
Yeah.
And by the way, we won't be taking care of your data, so you better handle that. That's basically what
the size G4 is it?
I believe it's a 60 gig.
I mean, the size of the screen.
Oh, it's a 15-inch.
15-inch, you know? Actually, that's not a bad one to change the hard drive. I mean, if you have a 17-inch, don't
bad.
Try it yourself. But the 15-inch is
it
not...
It depends on the model. Yeah,
the PowerBooks are actually not all that bad.
The older PowerBooks,
I've done it a couple times.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So what I think I would do if I were you at this point is I would get that hard drive outside of your case because you have to do that anyway. And that depends on whether you're still kind of under some kind of relationship with a warranty situation with the Genius Bar, but basically you're not, and it's going to cost you more money to have Apple do any work on this than rather some local company. In Santa Cruz, there's Dave's Computing. I'm not sure about Carmel Valley, but there are other businesses that will replace your hard drive. But in any case, what I would do, go to one of those other companies, say, will you take out the hard drive that's in there, put in a new hard drive, because you know you need that, right? And once mm-hmm. that's done and you've got your hard drive taken out, now you can get an internal enclosure and start trying
external
to get the data
enclosure.
Off.
External
and typically, though, but if they change your hard drive out for you, there's also the service of them taking, you know, you can say, I want this hard drive off and my data on this hard drive on the new hard drive. And they just do
that. They might do that whole thing for you.
It might just be part of it.
If the hard drive is not dead already.
Yeah. So, now, the same thing is if they can't do it, you know that the level of complexity is such that you need a data recovery space. And one thing I would say about all of this is if you're going to, you know, suck it up and take a lot of expense and have a data recovery place do it, or if you're going to accept that you're not going to get the data back, take that opportunity to express to your loved ones the horror of not having a good backup, because it's a really bad experience. The only good thing you can get out of it is you can help people not be in that same space.
Mm-hmm.
And
right. A lesson learned.
A lesson learned for other people around you is, you know, it's kind of nice. Please, everyone, do a backup of your computer. And that means getting another hard drive and copying data that's important to you to that other hard drive, because every hard drive is just a potential to fail. Every hard drive that exists right now at some point will stop working.
Yeah.
Just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the call. Good luck.
And then also, one other thing that you tend to want to do when you're backing up hard drives is have a plan. Know what files are most important to you, so that way once you get to that point where you can, you know, drag files from the damaged hard drive onto your new hard drive, you can back up the most important things absolutely first.
And do not stack the backups. Don't say, I'm going to back up this thing and this thing and this thing all at once.
Yeah, you just back
up one and wait. So what you need when you're doing data recovery for your own, when your hard drive is failing, is you need to have time to do it and you need to have space to put the data.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have time to do it and space to put the data, don't work on it. Because every time you use that failing drive, you have a higher potential chance of never being able to access the data.
Yes.
And, you know, if it does mount one time, you better have a hard drive there and you better have a few hours to move files slowly.
You know what I do? I make a folder and I call it my WIP folder, work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I do, documents and client files or whatever, I put in there. And then, you know, of course, I have my applications folder separate. So when I do backups, I only back up the WIP.
Right.
And people might be thinking, oh, I need to back up my whole hard drive.
Don't do that.
But really, you don't need to back up applications. You could, if things were that bad, you could always reinstall your applications.
And here's another aspect. If you have some email, but you also have some family photos, and the only copy of family photos is that you get those photos.
Yeah, right. And the other interesting thing is when you just tell a hard drive through some like Carbon Copy Cloner or some other utility, usually it'll back them up oftentimes in alphabetical order, which means applications folders first. That's all stuff you can get off the internet or that comes with your computer. And then comes library and system. And then very last is users, and that's where all of your data is. And that should be first. And so that's definitely something to think about, is plan ahead.
From Freedom, near Watsonville, John, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, John. Welcome.
Oh, great, because my signal kind of been cutting out. I wanted to know about I have an e-machine. I can't remember how they're different than regular computers. But I wanted to know, can they go into 110 degree atmosphere?
An e-machine to 110 atmosphere?
Yeah, well, I mean, like 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
100 degrees? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, no problem.
So computers in general can handle that high. Okay.
Oh, yeah. If the temperature, a human being can handle it, a computer can handle it. That's the general rule. Like, don't even worry about it, except for maybe the really cold stuff. But
now, you don't want to be using it on, say, a bed with big poofy sheets where it's blocking your air vents. That will, you know, prevent your computer from
being able to... That's a big thing, is make sure airflow happens.
You can't do that?
Al is making some ironic humor there.
You don't want to use it in a microwave. You know, you just like kind of want
to... I said places where humans
not
be
next to a big microwave either.
It's a good point.
What's the difference between an e-machine and a regular computer? I can't remember.
The big thing is that the company subsidizes it by advertising. That's basically what it is, right? So they're going to say, we're going to build the cheapest machine possible. We're going to throw a whole bunch of advertising and kind of control your media experience through that computer, and we'll give it to you for cheaper or for free. And it's a great opportunity to be a consumer for a corporation.
So we need advertising built into
Wouldn't you guys agree on that? What's an e-machine is advertising built in?
Yeah, I mean they're OEM machines. You know, they're
cheap computers.
Cheap computers,
and they subsidize it with advertising.
You can still do stuff on them, and there's nothing wrong with, you know.
And I get your second question has to do with an iPhone. What about?
Well, I'm curious. Can I use it sort of like these new netbooks
No, okay. An iPhone does not allow you to plug in a keyboard to it or an external monitor, really. You can do some video output, but no keyboard, no mouse. The iPhone is definitely set up to be a phone, not a computer, as much as Miles and I would like to be able to plug in a keyboard.
Although I'd be curious, after iPhone OS 3.0 comes out,
an application might come out that will do that, because they're going to be enabling USB both directions, so as a hub as well, if you will. So you'd be able to potentially... That would be nice. But not right now.
And that's
so
a software update too, 3.0. So I'm
not sure if the USB chip that's on the older iPhones will actually have the ability to be upgraded, because that ability has to do with switching power configuration. Mm. It might be physical.
Okay.
So one more?
One more thing is I have an old Apple laptop, one of those old candy colored ones.
Yeah, sure.
And it worked great for years, but suddenly these colored lines started appearing on the monitor, and more and more, like these straight lines. Like when you watch an old film, you see like a streak run through it.
So what's happening with it is that the screen, the LCD screen itself, the connectors that are going to the screen are slowly degrading, and they're pulling off. It's probably because you've been hanging out in 100-degree weather. And the connector slowly pulls off, and as it pulls off, it doesn't get the same kind of signal level, and you get that striping.
Yeah.
And is there a way to fix it?
No. I mean, yes and
you,
no.
You can take apart the whole computer, but I mean, with laptops, it's usually in the hinge assembly because you're opening and closing
the
computer.
You can get an external monitor.
Not on those old ones.
It might have been just cloning.
If you really want to deal with it, like if it gets to the point where you're going to throw it away or you're going to try to fix it, you want to take off the outer casing of the LCD itself, and you basically want to try to start pressing around on the connector points and around the shell of it. And you might get it to start functioning. You also might get it to stop functioning even more. So it'll be a fun experiment. Have a good time with that. Make sure your data is off the computer before you do that.
Quick question. If I put it, can I not plug another monitor into the computer?
You might be able to if it has a monitor port. Laptops sometimes do, sometimes don't. I'm not sure if those old ones do.
I feel like if you do, it'll be cloning display, not
but it
as
should,
a second
yeah, it'll
display.
Clone yes. the display, but it won't have the lines.
So you could maybe use it as a desktop machine once your screen stops.
Or really cool, like music player or something. John, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That's a fun thing about out-of-warranty equipment is most people say, oh, man, it's out of warranty. But, you know, some geeks, oh, man, it's out of warranty. I get to take it apart and no consequences, you know.
From Slo County, Aaron, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I'm a computer science major at Cal Poly, and I'm currently taking a computer security course. And we talked about a couple of things that you guys just mentioned. First of them is robots that can recognize people. And the other one was robots with guns. And I wanted to give two quick stories about those.
Well, first off, we've talked about robots for guns, but those ones are being controlled by human beings right now. And those are in the military service. And we don't have those in the U.S. I don't think they're running around very much. So, but go on.
Yeah, that's the issue, because we were talking about a Air Force kind of gun that was an anti-aircraft weapon that was totally computer-controlled, and it was trained to detect spinning rotor blades. And they thought it worked great. And in testing, it seemed to detect when, you know, a helicopter blade was spinning. And then so they took this anti-aircraft gun, totally computer-controlled, and wheeled it out on the tarmac and had a test helicopter that they felt like blowing up. And they set that spinning, and they turned this robotic anti-aircraft gun on, and it immediately swiveled around and shot out the fan of the closest men's room. Hmm. It recognized, you know, spinning blades and stuff.
And there was a lot of unfortunate windmill accidents with that thing, too, I heard.
It cannot be used in Holland is the problem.
Right. Yeah. Completely confused there.
So the premise that our instructor was trying to get across was that robot-controlled guns are usually a bad idea.
I agree.
And another thing about robots that can recognize people, still it's the facial recognition software that's just not quite up to par yet. And we were talking in class about a vending machine in Japan that was trying to recognize the age of the person at the vending machine.
I heard about
whether they got smokes or not.
Yeah,
and so it couldn't tell the difference between a 7-year-old and a 70-year-old.
Yeah,
so
that kind of stuff is really complex. I mean, facial recognition stuff is basically like a triangulation of, like, is there a largest type dark space and then two smaller ones that are about the same size, kind of in a triangular form. You know, basically it's looking at the face in some sense. But it gets better and better, and it has to do with how much processing power you have. So if you have a lot of processing power, you can identify a person specifically, and you can do age detection to some degree. But keep in mind that all this stuff is totally messed up when someone has a print of a face, right? You just take the face and you put it where your face is, and it's not a 3D camera, so it just sees whatever face. You know, anybody can be Sean Connery with the right magazine in front of their face.
Yeah, so I think that's just The same thing with the fingerprint recognition software. You can photograph someone's finger and then
That actually depends on the type of sensor, because a lot of these sensors have a glass thing. You actually need a ridge form
with IR and
And it actually is doing a kind of a horizontal sweep of it, if you will. So it needs some ridging. But you can make a mold too, or you can just bring somebody's finger around. I mean, there's ways to defeat all these things.
I thought the IBM ThinkPads were using a form of induction as you're going across.
You need a tissue type thing definitely with those. So it depends on the technology. Now, I agree, we don't have artificial intelligence good enough to let it out and decide whether it's going to kill things. You know, absolutely, let's not do that.
Right.
And the thing that's creepy and weird about these stories is that these are the first steps you would need to get to the point where artificial intelligence was smart enough to understand whether a person could buy cigarettes because they're 18 or not, just by looking at them, or as smart as a human being would be.
Cigarettes are dangerous,
It's a matter of time. Yeah. That's true.
Well, I can imagine
especially
they would
if they climb telephone poles.
They'd have enough computing power in, say, something like a Las Vegas casino to maybe recognize, card counter that was banned from Caesars
The Las Vegas casinos do know an individual whether they've come in for the first time or not, right? They're doing facial recognition on every single person. They're making databases. If you enter their space, they're capturing it. They do know whether a person's come back in and whether they've gotten kicked out again just from a face. That's happening right now. Mm-hmm. They have enough money. It's not that complicated. You know, actually, I think my iPhoto application on my laptop has that ability, right? It can detect faces and knows who it is.
Well, it's much more
simplistic, but when you throw enough processing power, it works.
You know,
there's a whole Twitter account that's just images that iPhoto has detected faces in weren't actually.
Oh, I got to get that.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Chocolate chip cookies that had the chips and eyes and
There's that one. But then, you know, maybe there's some foliage and then some leaf over in the corner has this really small face that's been
recognized. It'd be
good
for detecting subliminal things in ads.
And finding Jesus in toast.
Yes.
I mean,
there you go. There you go.
You need to have a toaster, basically, that when it detects faces, it slides the toast off into a safe or something.
It has a Fox Network drawer.
Just Twitter's Fox Network and says, new toast.
Pareidolia. Mm-hmm.
I guess if you had that technology that worked on a vending machine, it would end up being that the cost of the product you're vending would be like $1,000 for a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'd be curious actually to have a discussion on Geek Speak after the Terminator movie, the newest Terminator movie comes out.
How close it is.
Because that's something something you don't hear very often, that not just discussion of was the movie entertaining or whatever, but how possible are these things? How likely, what things do we have to worry about?
Right.
Or for that matter, how far does a computer go before you say, that's sentient, that is acting like a human being?
And the whole idea, anybody that's in an artificial intelligence, especially mixing artificial intelligence with robots, everyone gets the robots could take over the world someday, scary scenario, right? Just like watch out for zombies. Like that is such a part of our culture that I have this weird feeling of trusting people that are doing this kind of thing. They're not going to, mess up. But then again, the fan blades in the men's bathroom near this anti-aircraft gun blows it up, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, they're not that smart. Like, it's kind of scary. I don't like the idea that there's a robot that's deciding what to shoot. That's scary. And at the same time, if you have an missile defense thing, you kind of want it to be a little careful.
To be honest, I'm not too comfortable with a lot of humans deciding to
have
shoot. So I guess it's all, six of one half a dozen of the other.
Right. So does a robot have the right to bear arms? All right. only if it can vote, I think.
Does a robot have a right to be an arm?
Well, yes, apparently.
Well, didn't we cover robot arms last? Okay, enough of this. From Carmel. Will, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, hi, you guys. I learned a big lesson here. I have an external hard drive that I have messed up by giving it a 4-inch ball, and I realized that I've been treating my external the same way I treat portables, and there's probably a difference, but portable hard drives. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I am trying. I listened with interest to a previous caller here. I've been trying to get one or two files off of this terabyte of data.
Do you have a terabyte? Is it one hard drive inside there that's a terabyte?
One terabyte, exactly.
Okay. And when you said, did you throw a ball at it?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
It was sitting on a mattress on the floor, and it tipped over, fell 4 inches, and now I can't read it won't boot up. my computer.
So desktop type hard drives, the larger hard drives, they have no, they don't dissect anything about physical movement, right? So they're just working, and all of a sudden you drop it and it's working, and then all of a sudden the heads hit the platter and bye-bye data.
And, that's probably
yeah,
it.
And getting data off that's going to be extremely hard. It's possible that a few of the files are okay, but and you might want to just go to a recovery place because they're going to open it up, and if they see silver in the filters, they throw it away. Because the data's gone.
I see. Well, it's not making any clicking sound.
Right.
Well,
let me just say one more thing. That you're right. The portable drives, meaning laptop hard drives, the smaller ones, they actually have motion sensing stuff. So when it accelerates quickly, like it's falling or if it's free falling, it will actually park the head. It'll take the heads out of the platter range, and then the heads bounce up and down. Now the heads can still get destroyed by that, but it's more likely that the platters will be okay. Mm-hmm. Now keep in mind these things are microscopic, right? So yes, they are designed differently, and yes, if you want to, be throwing your hard drive around on a mattress and throwing it on the floor, pick a portable hard drive.
But if you're really worried about it, get a solid state drive.
Yeah.
Then you don't
get
have
what?
To worry. A solid state drive.
A solid state hard drive is basically a hard drive that has no moving parts in it. It's very much like those things you stick in cameras.
Yeah, well, I suspect that's what I've bought now. And I want just one question here. At the recommendation of Western Digital's helpline, they told me to pick some internet software. So I got a program called PC Inspector, and it reads the root directory.
Good.
And it reads the whole index. When I started to try and lift just the two files I care about, and fortunately they aren't grandma's photographs, but it looked like it was a process that was going to take days and days, according to the math, unspooling. Is that likely?
Well, what's happening is this. It looks like part of the hard drive is still in good shape. So most likely the head actually hit the platter and pulled some metal off of it. And that's not going to be really detected. There's no the system's not designed to recover from that, right? It's not like CD optical drives in a car that kind of know, well, if I've skipped, let's pretend like we're just going to go over that spot because it got scratched. The hard drive doesn't work that way. If it's got a damaged spot like that, it tries and tries and tries, and it has failures, and it gets confused where it is. So there's a lot of problems with trying to access it. Now, you could, I'd very quick, try one drive, try one file, and then try the other file. I'm assuming that software is going to do basically what you need. So let it do it and have it run for a few days. There's no problems with that. I mean, in fact, we have computers sometimes that run for weeks getting data off hard drives, and they build a lot of the data back. So if you've got the time and you've got the power, do it.
Yeah, bear in mind, what you have is most likely not a solid-state drive. You have to specifically
The new hard drive, Miles is saying, if you bought a new hard drive, if it didn't say solid-state on it, it's not a solid-state drive.
And if you didn't pay three times or four times as much for it.
Yeah.
The other way to know is if you're running a hard drive and you put your ear to it, or if you move it and it feels like there's something moving in there, it's not a solid-state drive.
Right.
And if you take it and you bounce it off the bed and it stops working, not a solid-state drive.
Right.
Thank you for the call.
Does it make sense for me to reformat this or
the old hard drive? Old hard drive. Don't ever use it again. Like, get the data off if you can, and then open it up and pull the magnets out of it with some screwdrivers and stuff, and use some pliers and throw them on your fridge because those are cool. But other than that, no, it's garbage.
Okay.
Or don't put it in the garbage. Put it in electronic waste because it's got material in there that's not good for us, and we want to recycle that.
No, of course.
Thank you so much for the call.
Also,
Bye.
The platters make very, very nice mirrors.
The platters
and
are
wind
beautiful.
Chimes.
Yes, and they're out of glass. They're pretty cool.
You
they're
can
metal,
go in and get
safer.
Some Torx screwdrivers and open that thing up, and it's really fun to dissect.
GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Great Infusions Coffee Beanery and Espresso Machinery Showroom, offering artisan coffees, coffee makers, and specializing in home espresso machine parts and repairs. Located at 317 Potrero Street, on the corner of River Street in Santa Cruz, or online at www.greatinfusions.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. I'm Lyle Troxell. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto, on the web at kusp.org. Al, 45 seconds. Goofy USB device.
It's the crazy USB device of the week. It's a frayed USB cable that comes out of your computer like it's ripped, but it's actually a 2 gigabyte flash drive. It's just disguised as a ripped and frayed
cable.
Cable.
It's like a ripped cable, but you put
like
it in.
Somebody ripped
and you've
off your hard drive and the wires hanging.
See, that's cool.
Yep. So you plug that in as if you're plugging in some external device and freak people out.
I'm Lyle Troxell for KOSP and for GeekSpeak. Coming up next, Car Talk on KOSP. It's made possible by a grant from the Howley Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County, and we appreciate their support. Geeks, thank you very much for being here this week. Next week, we'll be here again. Participate in our forums, geekspeak.org.